you may have seen, is a member of the Queen City Podcast Network, powered by Ortho Carolina. Find out more at queencitypodcastnetwork.com.
Actors, right? The road to fame and celebrity. All right, I get it. You've had an incredible life.
Aren't you sick of hearing about them?
Me too.
The only problem is, I'm one of them. Except I'm not famous.
Oh, you've probably seen me.
A bunch of times. I'm the guy with the information about the hero's dad. I'm the doctor that can't figure out what's wrong with one of the main characters. I'm the guy they just punched in the face during the interrogation. My name's Brian LaFontaine, and I'm a professional actor. Oh, and it's not just me. There's a ton of us.
We're the ones you don't hear about.
Yeah, we're the names that scroll by at lightning speed during the end credits. But there's way more of us than there are of them. We're important too, dammit. Because without us, they can't tell the rest of the story. So this is for all the movie and TV prostitutes, homeless people, drug dealers, cab drivers, cops numbers 2, 3, and sometimes 4, the pilots, the waitresses, and girl at party.
This, as you may have seen, getting cut out of anything stings, says today's guests. Yeah, it does. I know. It's happened to me. It's happened to a lot of people in this business. But this guy's had more than his fill. He's also had a lot of great things happen, too. We cover all of it. It's a beautiful day in the neighborhood, army wives, being Asian, not being Asian enough. It's a never-ending cycle of mayhem. So come sit down with me as I chat with Stephen West Rogers.
We were getting ready to do this massive renovation.
Really?
That was going to cost a lot of money. And we were talking about, you know, it's going to be okay. It's going to be worth it because we're going to stay in this house until our son goes to college or whatever he decides he wants to do, right? Mm-hmm. Like, we're going to plant roots here.
Right.
So it was all going to be fine. Well, then, like, we were also going to be paying for a private school because the school district here isn't the greatest.
It is not. And
so we were, you know, talking about all that, and we were seriously, I mean, I had, like, I was waiting on one more builder to send me his estimate, and
right.
my wife was like, or we could move. And I was like, fuck, we can't move. Like, we just spent all this money on architectural plans and all this shit. We're at the finish line right now, and, like, you just want to stop and just go run a different race.
Oh, my God. You
know? But then she was like, well, think about how much private school is. And, yeah, and it's, like, 20 grand a year.
Oh, my God.
So we're like, there's no way that we're... If we spent this money on this renovation, I mean, we would make it work. You know, we would have to find a way to make it work.
Right.
I would have to do something other than
sure
than being a stay-at-home dad
male
who's an actor on the side. Oh, yeah. Like, I was looking up different Kegel activities just to prepare myself. Is there such thing as mouth Kegel? Once she kind of brought that up, you know, like, well, 20 grand a year that we're going to save over the next, you know, K through
right.
12. I
right.
was like, shit, yeah, that's a really good point.
Right.
And she was just like, you know, we could move to, like, the Myers Park School District or something.
Right.
And I was like, if you can find a house in our budget in the Myers Park School District, I'd be more than happy to entertain it.
Challenge accepted.
Oh, I said that basically walking out the door
right.
to go to a friend's house to watch a football game.
Right.
He lives 5 minutes from me.
Yes.
And I was halfway to his house and I got a text from my wife.
Are you serious?
And she found a house. And I was like, you got it. And she played she played her hand well. It
wow.
was like she had that ace just like in her back pocket mm-hmm. waiting for the moment to pull it out.
Do you think she had already done the research before the conversation?
I don't know.
She was waiting?
I have a feeling maybe. This house, and we didn't buy this house,
okay.
but it was a mid-century modern, but nothing had been done to this house since 1955.
Okay.
It
sure.
needed a massive overhaul.
Right.
You said find one.
So the search began, and then, yeah, we got in that house. That was a really long way of explaining. We just got in that house just a few months ago,
right.
Brian. We've been in that house, I think, about 3 months, maybe. Yeah, how do you like that? You're in for a long one.
So,
every question is going to have a half hour answer to it. Well, when I was 5 years old, Brian.
exactly. I just asked you what you wanted for lunch.
Yeah.
So
roast beef is fine.
Okay.
Thank you.
So, Steve Rogers, where may we have seen you?
I guess if you live in Charlotte mm-hmm. recently, I've had a Winterfest. The Carowinds Winterfest commercial. I'm the dad.
Oh, okay.
The little
okay.
girl with the snow
okay.
globe.
Okay.
And,
yes, yeah. yes, yes, so yes, yes, yes.
I'm the dad in that.
Okay. Now, outside of anyone who lives outside of the Charlotte
area, of the Charlotte area,
where may we have seen you?
Okay, people in Atlanta may have seen me in a few, one Georgia Lottery commercial. Okay. A lot of commercials. That's
sure.
kind of my bread and butter. But
sure.
for TV, film, you could see me on the cutting room floor of A Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood.
I just watched that last night.
You could see me on the cutting room floor of Mr. Mercedes.
So you got to be looking down.
You got to be looking down the whole time. I actually made the trailer for A Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood,
right.
but I did not make the actual final
right.
Cut of the film.
Right.
Another actor was replaced, and I was in that a scene with that actor.
Oh.
And I have a feeling that, you know, and I think that that's where I went.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Yes.
Matthew Reese is phenomenal.
Yes,
by the
he
way.
Is.
He's in such an amazing person.
Yes,
really
he is.
Really cool guy.
So, first of all, I got to start with this. Steve Rogers?
Captain America. And I used to live in Brooklyn. Like, I lived in Brooklyn for 5 years. I actually had a guy, I was on a service call with Time Warner, and he was just yep. like, before we get into the call, sir, can I just tell you how cool it is that your name is Steve Rogers and you live in Brooklyn? Okay, go ahead. What can I help you with? I was like,
it never even occurred to me.
Yeah.
Colleen pointed it out. She was like, you're interviewing Captain America? And I had to stop and go, holy shit.
Yeah. And then I threw the West in there. It was funny because, like, as a kid,
right.
you know, it was just like, yeah, you know, like Clark Kent was Superman, Captain America, Steve Rogers. And I was like, who gives a fuck? Eat shit. Until, like, the MCU, you know, actually right. made, like, Captain America cool.
Right.
So, yeah, like, I spent my whole life with no one giving a shit except for, like, really, really nerdy,
okay.
you know, comic book kids.
Right.
Just like, ah, it's awesome, your name's Steve Rogers. And
right.
I was like, yeah, thanks. No one else gets it. And then I'm like, and then I got married and professionally decided to hyphenate because...
Right.
They're, you know, Steve Rogers is a very
sure.
basic kind of a name.
Mm-hmm.
And I, you know, wanted it to be different,
right.
stand out a little bit, maybe.
Yes.
So I'm a hyphenate, Stephen West Rogers.
You are.
And then the MCU comes out with all of the Marvel stuff.
Right.
It's like, oh, you just,
no, I'm really
now
screwed.
You bailed on it.
That's right.
Yeah,
way to go. No, you're never going to work.
I'm a total dick. Yeah.
So, yes, I am talking to Stephen West Rogers, where you may have seen him. Aside from the cutting room floor, as he mentioned, in A Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood, Mr. Mercedes. Yes, but you were also in Banshee as lab technician.
Mm-hmm.
Army Wives, you were recurring on that show for a while. I love that you were credited as Choi, paramedic Choi, William Choi.
Yeah.
We'll get back to that. I love the evolution of that. One Tree Hill, you did multiple episodes of that as engineer, the shunning trauma nurse,
mm-hmm.
and then...
Are you sensing a theme here?
Oh, yeah. Yes. Little Chicago with our good friend Scott Thomas,
yeah,
who I interviewed, for those who remember. And I love this. Best character name ever as Dirty.
Dirty.
Your name was Dirty.
Dirty.
That's
yeah.
the best.
Well, what about you see that there's a horny camper victim? That's a pretty good...
For you?
Yeah.
No, is that listed on here?
It should be, yeah.
In the IMDb?
On the IMDb's.
Horny camper.
Horny camper victim. That's one of my favorite.
Oh yeah,
Carver.
Oh my gosh, I totally missed that. Horny camper guy.
Okay, is it guy? It was victim for a while. Maybe they changed it. It was horny camper
they
victim.
They realized you're no longer a victim. If you're horny and you're
oh,
male
well,
now.
I died.
Yeah. Oh my God. Like, yeah, I get it. You've done a lot of commercials and that's your bread and butter, as you said, but
yeah.
you've done other stuff. People have seen you. You've had some
sure.
success.
Sure.
You've gotten some hits.
Yes.
I'm sure. You're
yeah.
like, I did that.
Yeah.
Hell yes. How long have you been here in the Southeast doing this, working on this?
I moved to North Carolina in like the 90s, early 90s.
You're originally from Hawaii?
Born in Hawaii. Yeah, my dad was in the military, so I've
okay.
been all over. Born in Hawaii, lived in Maine, Nebraska, Germany, mm-hmm. Texas, and then here. And then, you know, I moved in my adult life to New York.
Right.
And I went to school in Wilmington.
You went to UNCW?
I did.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. So I actually didn't really start acting professionally until about 13 years ago is when I got
really
like I got
really?
Rusty. Yeah, Rusty became my agent.
Okay.
I was with another agency when I was younger called Maxan. I don't know if you
oh,
remember Maxan.
Sure. I remember. I know Maxan.
It was right. I mean it was very I mean it was the boutique of boutique agencies,
yeah.
you know. I mean it was very small. And I think the only thing I ever got out of that was a couple of extra roles.
Okay.
One of which being in Carrie 2 the Rage.
Oh yeah.
And I worked for like 3 months on that fucking
movie. Did you really?
I did.
Yeah.
Like there was one time when we were shooting second unit stuff, all overnight stuff uptown at the old convention center.
Yeah.
And I was one of the party kids.
Okay.
So I was there every single night. And I was leaving there and going to work and then getting off of work and like finding a place to shower or something and starting that routine all over again. And I did that for about 10 days. Wow. I was able to do it for like 10 days until my body completely shut down.
Holy crap.
And I slept for like over 24 hours.
Oh my God.
Passed out.
Did
and
you
I was
really?
Like, yeah, it was miserable. But, you know, it wasn't paying enough.
No.
As an extra, you can't just quit your job.
No, you can't.
And so you're on set for 12-hour days.
Absolutely.
And mine was, you know, from like 7 p.m. to 7 a.m. or something like that. And then, I mean, we got well fed.
Sure.
You know,
I had
some time to rest in between things. I could run off to a stack of crash mats or something and go to sleep.
Oh, my God. Carry two.
Yeah.
Yeah, I had a slight... heartbreaking teaser of a story with that one, because they called me to do the table read for that. Mm-hmm. You know, every so often they'll bring in, they're like, we need other readers to fill the rest of the, Steve, you're going to read every other male part.
Right.
Yeah, just for the table read.
Yeah.
And I think, I can't remember if that was the first one of those that I ever did. It was one of the first couple that I ever did. And, you know, they always tell you, bring your headshot and resume, because then you can hand it off and you never know what's going to happen, sort of thing. So I did. And like, they went nuts over me, like, because I was shifting gears and shifting, you know, characters on a dime. And they were like, who the hell is this guy? So I gave him the headshot and resume. And the director was like, yeah, thank you, whatever. And I didn't think twice about it. And then I don't know how many weeks into production, I got a phone call. Like, the first AD called and he was like, hey, Brian, there's a role where the actor can't make it and he starts working today. And it was like he was going to shoot for like the next 5 or 6 days.
Wow.
Yeah. And I was like, oh, okay. And he was like, can you do it? And I said, absolutely.
Yeah.
He's like, okay, hold on. He's like, and I will get back to you. And then like, I'm sitting there just drooling.
Yeah.
And then he calls me back about an hour later and he's like, the guy can make it after all. And I was like, fuck you. Yeah. Yeah. Gotta love this business.
Yes. Yeah,
now, 2007 though, you starting, like, I feel like I've known you longer than that. I know I've known you longer than that.
Yeah. Well, so that's what that's when I feel like I really kind of hit my stride. Like, I started acting, I caught the bug, right?
Okay.
I caught the bug in junior high.
Okay.
Yeah. So it was a long time ago.
Yeah.
Right. I'm old. So
sure.
So
sure
junior high was a while ago.
Right.
The way it happened was that I had a friend and I was just watching TV one day and there was a local commercial came on for like an energy company and I was like, holy shit, I know that guy. And so the next day in school, I was just like, I saw you in a commercial. And he was just like, oh, yeah, like that's like my kind of side thing. You know, like I like to act and, you know, I get to go to these auditions and I have an agent, blah, blah, blah. And I was just like, tell me more.
Right.
And
that was here?
This was in Texas.
Oh, in Texas.
Yeah,
okay.
I was living in Texas at the time.
Yep.
So I went home and I told my parents, I was just like, I want to be an actor. Like, I want to do this. Like,
and they cried.
And I told them, I was just like, you don't have to. Like, the only thing that we have to pay for up front are headshots. If there's an agent that wants to take money from you up front, like, if they're not legit, you know?
Yeah,
like,
right.
I told them the whole, I was like, I know, like, this is before Google.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, I was like a fucking kid in junior high. I mean, I'm pretty inherently fucking lazy. But I took the time to figure this shit out.
Right.
To get the answers to this.
Yes.
So I could like go to my parents legit and be like, this is what I want to do.
Wow.
And my mom doesn't drive. She still doesn't drive.
Okay. That's awesome.
And my dad was in the Air Force. So, you know, it's like he could take off time from work to go take me to places and stuff.
Cool.
So they basically just said, or no, he couldn't.
Oh, he couldn't.
He couldn't.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh.
So they were just like, no.
Oh,
yeah.
Sure.
So no was the answer.
All right.
And
then.
That, you know, and I tried a few more times.
Yeah.
Like, I really wanted, wouldn't do it. So the next best thing was theater, you know?
Okay.
So I was just like, all right, one way or another, I'm going to find a way to do this.
Yeah.
Right. So I started acting. I started doing theater in high school.
Okay.
And that became my thing. I eventually, you know, went tech theater and theater. I think a lot of theater kids probably do that just because you're in that department.
Right.
And you are meeting all these people.
Right.
And it's not like you can build sets and perform.
Sure.
You know, it's not like people are building sets while you're on stage performing.
Exactly.
So it's like, okay, yeah, cool. Like, you know, I'll get into tech theater, I'll get into theater. And then graduation, I went off to college for a quick minute and I hated it and I left.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
All right. So short-lived
like
college experience.
Yeah, just tell me to shut up.
No, you're doing great. Yeah, so college was a short-lived thing. You didn't go because
I went back.
Oh, you did?
I did.
All right. Oh, that's right. UNCW.
Yeah.
Duh.
Yeah. So I went to App State.
Okay.
I went to CPCC, App State, Hated it. Never want to come back.
Okay.
And that's when I was just like, you know what? This is bullshit. I don't want to be here. I'm wasting my parents' money.
Okay.
All I want to do is act. I still, right, at that time, was like, I'm wasting time here.
Right.
Because all I really want to do is act. And I really want to focus my efforts on that, not this.
So your time in high school, when you were starting to establish at least your passion for it and show to your parents, I really do want to do, yeah, this. And I'm, you know, building that foundation.
Yeah.
That didn't influence them once you got, no, to college, of like, go ahead, study, no, theater, do whatever. They're like, no, you're going to get a real job.
And they, right, still probably don't want me to be an actor. Yeah. Like my parents are, I don't even tell them things anymore.
Really?
Yeah. Like,
wow.
When things happen, I don't tell, because they don't react.
Okay.
You know,
no, I get that.
They just kind of stare at me. I'm just like, I didn't just shit in my hand and then like juggle with it, you know, like.
That would be impressive too.
It would be impressive, but you know, it's somewhat shocking. Maybe a little speechless after you see someone juggle their own feces.
You don't see a lot of shit jugglers. you really don't.
Not nearly as much as you should.
I think you're onto something.
First, I got to learn how to juggle. Maybe that's part of the bit. The guy that shits in his hand tries to juggle but doesn't know how to juggle. And he's just clumsy.
He's just learning it out of order. Learning it out of order. But I mean, I don't think that that's too uncommon for a lot of us. I mean,
right,
my parents are supportive that I've been in this industry now for almost 30 years.
Wow.
Almost 30 years. Yes, that's how old I am. So, I mean, so they understand, like, okay, he's made it work and he has succeeded at it.
Right.
So, I mean, they're, you know, they're like, yay, on board. But they still look at me, you know, just blank face, like, I see it, but I don't understand it.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I'm sure that that's,
yeah,
what you go through.
Oh, absolutely. Well, for my dad especially, you know, I mean, he's an old Southern guy. He grew up,
oh,
in North,
really,
Carolina. Yeah.
Okay.
And that mentality was just like, you shut your fucking mouth, you do your fucking job,
oh,
you bring the fucking bacon home, you,
yeah,
put it on the table,
yep,
you go to sleep, and you rinse, repeat. Just keep doing that, yeah, same thing until, you know, whoever tells you to stop doing it tells you to stop doing it.
There's no doing what you love to do. You do what you have to,
right,
do, Jack.
And then, and my, you know, like I said, my dad, he does woodwork and,
okay,
stuff, right?
Yep.
So that was his hobby. So, mm-hmm, whenever he wasn't at work, he would come home. He was building something, or,
right,
leather. He also did leather work.
Wow.
So he was, you,
nice,
know, making saddlebags or,
damn,
whatever, you know?
Okay.
So yeah, that was my, like, you know, acting should have been a hobby.
Yeah, right.
My job should be bringing in enough money to support my family.
Right.
Which is what my wife does.
What did you study it in school? What were you studying in college? What's your degree in?
I double majored in film and creative writing.
Oh, you did?
And I minored in English.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So you were able.
Yes.
All right.
And my mom, and so the reason I actually decided to go to school for film and not for theater or acting.
Right.
Was when I got on Carrie 2.
Mm-hmm.
As an extra. The first, mm-hmm, day on set, we were filming at Midtown Sundries, which,
okay,
is now gone.
Oh, it is. That's right. It is.
Yeah.
Yes.
So we were filming there, and I just was completely awestruck of,
okay,
just the entire process.
Yeah.
I was just looking around at, mm-hmm, all the moving parts and people and everything that it takes to make, just to shoot one scene.
Right.
You know? And it was just amazing to me. I just loved it. It was like, this is like, this could be my office, you know?
Absolutely.
And what an amazing office this could be.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, you know, so when I decided to go back to school 3 years late.
Okay.
And I was just like, yeah, okay, I'm going to go to school and I'm going to study film because I want to know more about this whole process and,
right,
not just being in front of the camera. Yeah. And I've worked, you know, I've worked as a grip. I've worked as a PA. I've worked as an AC on, that's kind of like my pseudo side thing is,
right,
ACing, but there,
right,
the AC game is really difficult to break into,
sure,
right now in Charlotte.
So you're still trying to do some production work when,
yeah,
you can, when you need to, that sort of thing?
Yeah, I still kind of jump behind the camera and do,
right,
that kind of thing every now and then. Yeah,
because
when the opportunity presents itself.
You know, I did see that you've done some editing and directing and you've made some music videos and things like,
yeah,
that.
Yeah, a buddy of mine, and I love his music. If you guys, I mean, here's my shameless plug for a friend.
Plug
Ancient
it.
Cities. Go look up Ancient Cities. And listen to their music. They're a phenomenal band. But yeah, so, you know, the front man, I guess you could call, of Ancient City, Stephen Warwick, is a good friend of mine.
Mm-hmm.
Been friends for years.
Right.
I actually met through acting.
Yes.
We used to take acting classes together back,
right,
back in the Ed Gilwhite days, if anybody remembers that name.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Yeah, so Stephen, I've been friends for a while, and he was looking to have a music video shot.
Yep.
And I was just like, yeah, dude, like, let's do this. You know, I was like chomping at the bit. I want to do something,
right,
creative. I hadn't been creative in a while.
Yep.
And yeah, it all just kind of came together. We co-conceptualized over a few months. And
okay.
It was insane. But it all came together. We shot it. I edited it. Is that right? Edited?
Mm-hmm. I'm going to edit that.
Okay, yeah.
So don't worry about it.
I edited it. Yes. Such a weird word now.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you know, to direct it, to be behind the camera and feeling like, you know, in that control seat was, mm-hmm. it felt great. It just felt right, yes. you know? And you know, I was just kind of like, man, I just love this industry. I just love making things and doing things yeah. and being creative with things.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So you're full-time freelance. That's what you...
100%.
Yeah.
Yep. And I'm, you know, like I said, my son's 18 months old. I'm almost 18 months old. And so, yeah, I, you know, I'm kind of his caregiver in right. a way, I guess, you know. What, not to say that my wife, I mean, my wife definitely, she does probably more than I do.
She sounds like a terrible mom.
She's, yeah, just the worst, really, the way she works all the
money
time.
Money hungry worker, right. Yeah, exactly.
Can't keep her hands off the kid. Yeah. Lighten up, lady.
So let's talk about your storied acting career.
Yeah.
Let's dig into it a little bit.
Sure.
So yeah, I know. I mean, I saw what you posted a little while back when you had that snippet from the, I guess, one of the earlier trailers of A Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood
yes.
in theaters now with Tom Hanks about yes. the Mr. Rogers movie. So yeah. So was that like your first big like studio feature booking?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I was pretty fucking stoked on that.
Hell yeah.
You know, like when you book that. And Tom was attached at the time. Like, right. you know what I mean?
You knew you were auditioning for a Tom Hanks movie.
I did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it was about Mr. Rogers?
I knew it was about Mr. Rogers.
Right.
So yeah.
Yes.
And I was just like, holy shit, I can't believe it. So I did. So it's a funny story. I did the audition.
Right.
And then I get a call back. And Rusty, my agent, yep. calls me up. And he's just like, hey, buddy, you got a call back for this. They need you in Pittsburgh. And I'm like,
whoa.
Well, I'm working, like I'm on another shoot
right.
that I booked through you.
Right, right.
So I was like, I can't go anywhere because I'm working. I think it was a Bojangles commercial.
Okay.
You may have seen me on a Bojangles commercial. There you go. I was shooting a Bojangles commercial and he's like, yeah, they need you. And I was just like, well, I can't be there because I got this other thing going on. He was just like, ugh, well, you know, you said you could be there. I was like, I know, Rusty, but I'm here working yeah, on this Bojangles shoot. Right. I can't leave the shoot.
I'm working on something else.
And he's like, well, let me let him know what's going on. I'll get back in touch with you. So he gets me a call back and he's just like, hey, yeah. So apparently nobody else was able to make it to Pittsburgh for this callback
wow.
either.
Oh, yeah.
So they're going to pick from tape. And I was like, okay, you know, here's my shot, I guess.
God.
And then I had told a buddy of mine, I was like, I have an audition for a pretty big Tom Hanks film coming up. You know, obviously mm-hmm. you can't talk about details
right.
and things. So
right.
I didn't tell him anything more than that. He's in the industry.
Okay.
So he did some snooping and he finds out that it's being produced by Big Beach Films. And he used to work for Big Beach Films.
Oh, no.
And we have a friend
nice.
Who used to work up until very recently. She now works for Gina Rodriguez's production
okay.
company.
Yep.
But she was working for Big Beach, Molly Breeskin. And she, so Jim's just like, dude, Molly is plugged into this. Like, you need to get in touch with Molly.
Okay.
And I'm like, I can't do that because I'm just not the kind of person to be like,
aha.
I hate networking.
Yes.
I hate that aspect right. of this business.
Right.
It fucking kills me.
Yep.
It like burns my heart to do these things.
Yes.
I feel horrible about
right.
them. It feels gross to me.
Right.
So I'm like, I can't call Molly. Like, that's not my thing. I can't do that. I'm not going to stop you if you wanted to, though. And so he
very
reaches
subtle.
Out.
Smooth. Yeah.
So he reaches out to Molly and tells Molly that Gail Rogers is auditioning for this. We got to get him on this. She's like, oh my God. Like, you know, give me some time. I'll see what I can do. I don't hear anything. I mean, like,
sure.
days go by, a week goes by, and I'm just like, okay, well, you know, either Molly wasn't able to do anything
mm-hmm.
or she didn't do something. Like,
right.
I don't know. You know what I mean? It, anything's possible at this point. And Molly's busy. It's not like I can just be like, hey, just follow me up on that favor, you know? Like, so you just let it go. And I was just like, okay, I guess, you know, we're moving past that now.
Mm-hmm.
And then Rusty calls me, and he's just like, hey, buddy, so we're booking you for... you know, it was called You Are My Friend
oh,
at
okay.
the time.
So, okay.
Yeah, booking for You Are My Friend. And I was just like, holy shit. And it was really cool because it was a great experience. Kevin Johnson was also in it. And we were filming.
In that same scene?
We were filming the same day, same scene.
Oh, wow. Thing.
So he drove up from Atlanta, parked his car at my house.
Mm-hmm.
We took my car up to Pittsburgh. Where
so
we're
it's
filming.
Shot in Pittsburgh?
Shot in Pittsburgh.
Oh, okay.
Shot in Pittsburgh and New York, I believe, mostly.
So there was no, did it cast out of Atlanta?
It cast out of Pittsburgh.
Wow, that's crazy.
Yeah. Rusty got a hold of it somehow.
Yeah. Oh, okay, because you and Kevin are both with Rusty. Yeah. Sure. Yes. And both of you ended up...
And we both ended up booking.
And then ended up...
And then ended up on the cutting room floor.
So how much time did you have on it?
One day.
Just the one day.
One day.
Right.
Yep.
Okay.
It sucked to get cut out of it.
How did you find out?
So my wife supports me like to the nth degree.
Sure.
Like I've tried bailing on acting a few
times. Have you really?
Oh yeah. I feel like maybe I'm out of my mind here, but listening to your podcast, actually, I think I'm like, oh, okay. I don't feel so alone anymore. Mm. But you have these existential crises, right? Am I doing the right fucking thing? Where am I going? Is this the right? Should I be doing something else? Should I be doing something to bring in more money?
Right.
You know, like, should I just bail on this and get a job? My son was born. I need to provide for my son now. You know what I mean? All these things. So, yeah, I constantly am going through these things. My wife is always talking me off the ledge. No. She keeps saying 2020 is the year of Steve.
What was the fallout, if any, from that?
So my wife, and this was like a really rough time too, because we were in transition between getting out of our old house to put it on the market. So this is all very recently, obviously. And then getting the new house, like closing on the new house and doing all that stuff that you got to do, the inspections and all that. So in the interim, we were staying at my parents' house.
Okay, right.
So it was a very difficult... We were there for 3.5 weeks. Luckily, we only had to be with my parents for about a week and a half of it because they were out of town. But it was brutal. My parents live in Waxhaw.
Okay.
So everything was like an hour commute to do anything.
Yes.
My son to daycare was an hour commute. It was brutal every day. And I was just like in a really shitty place.
Right.
Already. And really, like, this was kind of like, I'm really looking forward to this movie coming out. At least I have that to look forward to, you know. And one day I came home and I was just really, really tired. My wife was watching TV. And she gets up and she's just like, TMI, my pet name is Duty.
Oh.
Yeah. Hers is Booger. So
thank you so much.
So that's
for that.
Out there.
Thank you so much for that.
So she gets up. She's like, Duty. And I'm like, yeah. She's like, I have something really horrible to tell you. And I'm thinking like, oh my God, my wife cheated on me.
Oh, Jesus.
You know? Yeah. I went to this really, really bad place. I was just like, oh my God. Like, I don't know what the fuck I'm going to do right now. I'm going to lose my collective shit right now.
Right.
And then she's like, you got cut out of the movie. And then I was like, well, that's not as bad as you fucking somebody else, right? Like the worst case scenario in my mind was, you know, she cheated on me.
Oh my God.
So to get cut out of a movie was just like, oh, yeah, that does suck. But nowhere near as bad as, like, my entire life going to shit, you know?
Way to throw some sunshine on that.
Yeah.
More with Steve Rogers in just a minute. You're listening to You May Have Seen, proud member of the Queen City Podcast Network, powered by Ortho Carolina. There are so many great podcasts on the network, and they're adding new ones all the time, showcasing great stories by great people and shining a spotlight on the Queen City. You can find them all at queencitypodcastnetwork.com. Shoutouts. I'm going to shout out some past You May Have Seen guests that I'm currently working with in a theatrical production of Neil Simon's The Odd Couple, opening later this month and running through the middle of February right here in the Queen City. Mark Scarborough. You remember Mark. He talked with a mouthful of food through the whole interview. Joanna Jowett, one of the most popular episodes in the You May Have Seen canon of interviews. If you haven't listened to it yet, be sure to check it out. And Patrick Keenan, the only two-time guest to this date on the podcast. Pat'll keep you laughing in every conversation you ever have with him. It's a blast working with these folks every night and watching them tear it up on stage. Amazing. All right, here's more with Stephen West Rogers.
Maybe she should be the actress if she had you that convinced.
I know.
That, oh my God.
Well, actually, funny enough, we met in high school in theater. And then we graduated the same year. We didn't see each other for 9.5 years. We weren't good enough friends to keep in touch. We were, like, ran in the same circles kind of friends.
Sure.
And then, we met 9.5 years later at Thomas Street Tavern watching a football game.
Mm-hmm.
She was in a relationship.
Sure.
Which ended a week later. Quick. Everything happened quick. Like, we started dating 6 months later, proposed 6 months later, we got married.
Wow.
We bought a house like 2 weeks before we got married.
Oh my gosh.
And then we waited 13 years to have a kid. 12 years?
Hey.
12 years.
So yeah, so she told you and then there you go. And that's, how did she find out though?
So she found out because she called, she was going to buy out a theater.
Oh,
an auditorium.
Really?
Yeah. She had already called a movie theater. Yeah. And she was just going to buy every seat in the theater and then invite all friends and family to come watch the movie.
Oh, wow.
And for me, you know, I'm just like, I mean, what an amazing wife, right? Like, that's an amazing fucking thing to do.
Yeah, you hit the jackpot.
But for me, oh my God, like, that's a lot for, like, a 30-second scene.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
I was like, I'm not like, in this. Right. I'm not an integral part. Clearly, I got cut out. I'm not an integral part of the storyline here.
Right.
So it was just like, you know, when I found that out, I was like, holy shit. Like, that, I don't know, that stressed me out. Just knowing that, you know, all these people were going to, like, be sitting in their seats and then just be like, woo! And you guys just cheered through my scene. Now it's over and we're moving on. And now you just have to sit and watch the rest of this movie, you know?
But it's a Tom Hanks movie. Pretty good chance it's going to be a good thing.
Probably going to be a good, pretty good movie. Yeah. So, yeah, so she called Molly, basically, and was like, hey, I'm getting ready to, like, book a whole theater. Like, I'm going to buy every seat in this theater for and throw a party for Steve, have it catered, like, all this shit.
Oh, my God.
And I just want to make sure, like, he didn't get cut out. And she was like, because she was in the, she wasn't on the, in the film department.
Right.
Of, or the film, portion of Big Beach.
Things like that. Right.
So she was just like, I don't know, like, let me talk to the film people at Big Beach and the producers there. Let me, you know, find out from them. So she got back to Amanda and she was just like, I think he probably got cut out. And so, yeah, she was like super, super bummed. But when the trailer came out and I was in the trailer, she was like, ooh, there's a chance. There's a chance. I'm like, nah, they usually don't go and add things back in.
Right.
You know,
right.
Like if it gets cut, it's usually gone.
Yes. Well, damn.
Yeah, well, damn.
Damn.
Seriously.
Damn, damn, damn.
But anyways.
Well, and not to keep running down that hole, so then Mr. Mercedes, same thing?
Same thing.
Because that show is a little bit of a nemesis for me because really, well, I mean, I think it's done, first of all.
Yeah.
I think it's done. I loved the writing on it. I heard nothing but great things.
Yeah.
And I just could not... Couldn't break it. Couldn't crack it. I was like, oh, you got booked on Mr. Mercedes as young detective.
Young detective.
And then?
And it was shot in Charleston.
Yep.
The process of that, like getting cut out of Mr. Mercedes, getting cut out of anything stings.
Yes.
Right? Of course.
Yes.
It does. But getting cut out of Mr. Mercedes, I was just like, you know what? Okay.
Yeah.
Because my scene was with, oh my God, what can I think of his name?
Brendan Gleeson.
Brendan Gleeson. Yep. Thank you. Mm-hmm. My scene with Brendan Gleeson, he did like an hour rehearsal before a single shot.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
So I showed up with my one line.
Yeah.
I had one line. And that's another little story about that.
All right.
I had my one line. And so I just hung out because I walk into the scene, I say my line and kind of walk through, right? And that's it. So I'm just like hanging out in the back of this room. And it's just Brendan Gleeson and the other actor in the scene, whose name escapes me, and the director. They're, you know, I mean, I got to watch Brendan Gleeson work for an hour. I got paid.
Right.
It was like a masterclass.
Yeah.
It was fucking phenomenal.
Yeah.
To just be able to experience that and watch that and watch him work with the director and say, well, no, I don't think I would do that. Like, to see, like, you know, the director coming at it with his approach and what he wanted to see in the scene, but then Brendan Gleeson saying, no, like... And it was just amazing to just sit there and watch it. And of course, you know, every time my line came up, I'd step up and say my line, step off, you know, and sit back down and keep watching. But yeah, it was just such an amazing experience to watch him work. And so after an hour rehearsal, and keep in mind, I have one line.
Yeah.
And I say the line exactly the way I said it in my audition that got me booked. And I said it the same way every single fucking time I said it for an hour.
Yeah.
And then at the very end of that audition, right before we're getting ready to pull the trigger, the director comes over to me and goes, you might want to tone that line down or you're not going to make the cut. I'm like,
wow.
You cast me. You cast me saying the line just like this.
Right.
And then you watched me say the line just like, now I understand. You're working with Brendan Gleeson.
Right.
Who the fuck is this guy and why the fuck do we care? You know what I mean? Like... You probably already made a note.
Yeah.
You told the script supervisor, hey, just make sure that guy gets cut out of this fucking thing because I'm tired of hearing him say that while I'm trying to work with Brendan Gleeson. You know, like, fuck that guy. So, yeah, I mean, I'm like, you know, of course I'm going over it in my head. Like, okay, I've just been saying it this way. And how do I tone that line down? You know, and I'm like toning it down in my head and kind of going over it. And it's one line, but it just... It still means something to you, and so you really want to fucking nail that line.
Right. Right.
And then I got cut out. I guess I didn't tone it down enough.
So then let me ask you this then. Then does that make you think of, okay, then why did they cast me in the first place?
Right.
Do you think it has to do with...
Maybe.
Yeah.
Which is, I feel like that also is why I don't get cast
well,
a lot.
Shit. Well, I'm sure that, I mean, that goes for everybody. I feel, especially now in 2020. Holy crap. This is the first interview of 2020,
Ooh.
By the way. The first interview of 2020. Happy Man. New Year.
I feel special.
Yes. So so for those of you who can't see Steven, can you see him? Look really hard. So, I mean, so you were born in Hawaii, but I mean, what's your background, your heritage?
Yeah, my dad is of basically like English descent, right?
Okay.
The Rogers, and my mom is Taiwanese.
There you go.
Yeah. So,
right.
I'm biracial, but I've definitely have passed as Hispanic. I've played the Hispanic roles. I've auditioned as Native American before.
Have you really?
I have, yeah.
Really?
Yeah, okay. Twice actually. I've auditioned for Native American, once for House of Cards.
I used to, when I first started, because it was, again, here in the Southeast, like, I was one of the very few people that the agency had with really, really dark hair. So I look nothing like Hispanic, but I would get sent out every so often when they would get a call for Mexican or Hispanic.
Yeah.
They would be like, Brian, we want you to go. And I'm like, really?
Yeah.
And I would walk into a room with a bunch of Hispanic people. And it would be like, one of these things.
Right.
Yeah. And I'm like, I have no shot. Well, no shot.
Yeah, the Carowinds commercial that just ran. Like, my whole family was Puerto Rican, basically. And my father-in-law was African-American.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, but it all, I guess, I mean, you look at it on camera.
Sure.
It looks natural.
It all makes sense.
Yeah.
And that's a big thing now, especially, you know, with the culture that we have. And, and at this time that, I mean, you watch television commercials now, especially television commercials. They have changed dramatically over the past 2 years. Dramatically.
And I think that's why, like, that's become my kind of bread and butter is that I have that ethnically ambiguous look. And some people would say a great smile.
You have a million-dollar smile, dude.
I think, you know, like this I have a very soft, kind of face, right? And I think that mixed with the ethnic ambiguity kind of plays into that commercial hand really well.
So did you spend like the first handful of years of your, you know, career basically just auditioning for like Asian guy?
My first audition ever with Rusty was for Prison Break.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And I was like, dude, at that point, I was just like, oh, fuck, I got me a real agent.
There
and
you
like,
go.
My shit is about to blow up, you know. And of course, you know, like, I'm auditioning for Prison Break. This isn't fucking Extra and Carrie 2. This is fucking Prison Break for a speaking role, you know.
Yes.
Didn't get it. Okay. But then, yeah, everything that was coming through was very medical related, but never doctor. Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right.
It was always like, a nurse, trauma nurse, you know, things like that, but never the actual doctor. I love New York, and I miss the hell out of New York.
Of course.
Right?
There's a lot to miss.
There is. But the struggle of New York, once you leave New York and you come back to Charlotte, it's almost impossible to go back to New York.
Yes.
Like, to stretch out and have some space.
Hear your thoughts.
Yeah, you know, like, it just, the life, I mean, it's kind of a suburban life for me now, right?
Sure.
But it's still, like, I do miss walking out my front stoop and walking two blocks up to grab a bagel.
Right.
You know?
A really good bagel.
A really good bagel.
Yeah, right.
I definitely miss that, but, you know, the struggle of everything just doesn't outweigh the fun that you have.
Exactly.
Oh, so I have actually big news.
Okay.
One of the films
that
I worked on, I think last year.
Okay.
In 2018.
All right.
Can't say last year anymore.
All right.
Is a film called Washed.
Okay.
And it's like a stop motion type short.
Yes.
We just got into Slam Dance
with that film. Oh, nice.
Yeah. So me and the co-writer-director, Michael Bartolomeo, are heading to Park City, Utah in January.
That is incredible.
Yeah, to go promote this. And
you're one of the writers.
Yeah.
As well as one of the stars. Look at that.
Yeah. And then there's another film that we did called Solved. So I met Mike in Brooklyn.
Okay.
And he's one of the guys that like I really keep in touch with the most, probably.
Yep.
Yeah, we've made two short films together, and He was just in town visiting. His son is like 4 months older than my son.
Yep.
So, you know, there's a whole like, let's get the boys together kind of thing. And we brainstormed a third to round out the trilogy.
Oh my God.
Of these short stop motion kind of films. So we got another one that we're hoping to shoot later this year. And we also have a feature in mind.
That's incredible,
to,
man.
To shoot as well. So, I mean, if nothing else comes of my stay in Brooklyn, this comes out of my stay in Brooklyn.
Right.
And honestly, as an actor, I did jack all shit in New York.
Yeah. That's what I was wondering.
Yeah. I got there and I was like, you know, I got my headshots done. I was looking for agencies and it's such a difficult thing. Yeah. And I told you before, I hate the...
Self-promotion.
Yeah, I can't. It's just, it's gross to me.
And it's pretty essential.
It is.
Yeah.
Because, you know, in doing that, you find out who are the good agents, mm-hmm. who are the shitty scam artists.
Right.
You know, who is okay, mm-hmm. and then how do you actually get them to look at your fucking headshot and sign you?
Right.
And I just can't play that game. I'm horrible at that game, and I never got an agent. And I went on one audition.
Yeah.
For a commercial where they were actually looking for an Asian person. And funny enough, I probably wasn't Asian enough. I walked into the room and
I was like, New York City. These
people are all infinitely more Asian than I am. So I'm probably not going to book this role. So, and that's like, you know, that never happens in the Southeast. You know what I mean? Like, I've never walked into an audition in Charlotte, North Carolina and been like, I am the least Asian person here. That shit just doesn't happen. No. So, yeah, it was a weird feeling. But, you know, it's a land of diversity in New York. So, yeah, and that was pretty much it. And so what I ended up doing, I started doing some stand-up to kind of fulfill that...
Oh, my God.
That urge to perform. I fucking suck at it.
We're shifting gears. Tell me all about that. Because, you know, I have a background in that. I have a history in that. And that's where I started.
Yep.
Tell me. And you're a funny guy. You're a smart guy. You're a funny guy. You're a quick guy. So what didn't translate?
I think it's just the... Because when you start out, you're just like, you're jotting notes down, right?
Yeah.
Either in a notepad or on your phone or something.
Right.
And then you go up in front of an open mic audience and you're just kind of playing with it.
Right.
You know, how can I make this work? Well, I set out very stupidly in the beginning and said... I'm never going to repeat a joke.
Oh.
I'm always going to be coming up with new material. That was my thing. I was like, I never wanted to repeat a joke. I always wanted to be fresh. I always wanted to be new. And then I, you know, after a few really bad mics, mm-hmm. like, you know, where you're just like, oh my God, I think my wife chuckled once, you know?
Did you didn't resort to juggling your own feces at
I
any
didn't.
Point?
Did luckily, think- luckily. I did shit my pants probably a few times, but I didn't have the wherewithal to reach back there and juggle it.
Yeah.
So, you know, you do a few of those. And I realized later on, I was just like, yeah, no, you got to workshop these things. You got to keep doing the joke again and again and again.
Right.
And figure out what makes it zing or if it doesn't, you know? And then I was like, okay, well, these open mics are killing me. I need to be more comfortable in front of the open mic because, mm-hmm. you know, you get in front of a camera, you're rehearsed or you're prepared. You get in front of an audience for a play, you've rehearsed it for months, you know what I mean? So you're confident and you have all these people to back you up and mm-hmm. you know, all that stuff. But an open mic, you're by yourself. It's all on you. Either you're gonna kill it or you're gonna bomb.
Yep.
And there's no one else to blame but you.
Nope.
And I basically is just like someone asked me like what it was like to do stand up and I was just like, it's like having the smallest dick in the world and just standing up in front of a group of strangers and pulling your pants down. And hope that they're laughing for the right reasons. Like, that's how I describe doing stand-up comedy. So
that's pretty spot on.
Yeah, I mean, and it's just, you know, it can be so rewarding and so soul-crushing.
Oh, my God, yes.
And so I started actually hosting an open mic.
Did you really?
I did. It was in a small bar. I don't think the bar was open when you were living in Carroll Gardens. But it was actually in Carroll Gardens, mm-hmm. Union Grounds.
Oh, no, that doesn't ring a bell.
Yeah. And it was a cool little sports bar, and I got to know the owner from just going and watching football there and stuff.
So it looks like you've done a fair amount of writing because, well, again, I know that you studied that in school and
you've
kept with it.
Yeah.
And it's been working for you.
Yeah.
Okay.
I like it. It's...
It's always been a challenge for me.
It's relaxing. It can be relaxing. Whoa. It can be, like, kind of cathartic, too, you know? Like, because you get to... I think, like, writing screenplays.
Yes.
I love writing screenplays because... You almost get to like play you get to play like every character in the script, right? Because each character needs their own voice.
Yes.
And so you kind of need to get into the mind of that character. And
you're a better person than I am, because I find it very, very tedious. And it's just, man, it's really just difficult. I spend a lot of time by myself. Even more so than you do now, because you've got your son. And man, it just gets mind numbing to sit there and stare at a computer screen and be like, I got nothing. Yeah. All right. So before we start to get towards the end here, talk to me about your big, big moment of success as Choi Paramedic Choi William Choi on Army Wives. Because it says here that you did 8 episodes.
Was it 8?
Yeah, it says 8. Listed as 8. Shit. Did you think it was more than that or less?
No, I thought it was less than that.
Yeah. I guess. I mean, you had so many damn versions of your name.
I know.
You know. Tell me about that whole thing. Because, one, did you know that it was going to be that when you started?
Or
did it just evolve? And what were you thinking? And where were you at that point? And how did all that just kind of roll for you?
Well, okay. So prior to that, I booked on my third audition for Army Wives. I know, like I've heard the Army Wives. I mean, Walking Dead is my white whale. Like, I can't tell you the number of times I've auditioned for that. And then last year, Righteous Gemstones. I think I auditioned for like every episode of Righteous Gemstones last year and never even got a call back. It was my third audition. And I was like, ooh, like this is a trend. Because when I booked One Tree Hill, it was on my third audition.
Okay.
So I was like, oh, this is my thing.
All right.
Three. And Mark Young, if you remember Mark.
Mark and I
were buddies, and I would go to his house, and he would help me shoot my auditions.
Cool.
And I was like, cool, I got a director, you know, who can help me through all this. So I booked and, you know, went in, and my scene partner was Catherine Bell. Some people would say the series lead.
Sure.
Catherine would definitely say that. and she was such a sweetheart. You know, like we showed up, and it was just a blistering hot day in Charleston, South Carolina. We were shooting all exteriors. And then, so I showed up and they changed the lines. They were just like, they're like, well, because they're very particular and accurate, right, on that show.
Yep.
So we had the lines as scripted, as memorized.
Mm-hmm.
And we get into the scene and we're playing through the scene. And they actually have an on-set paramedic standing there, a consultant, who goes, we really wouldn't do it like that. And they're like, okay, how would you do it? Script supervisor. Script supervisor comes over, writes down what we would all say.
Mm-hmm.
Xerox is 2 copies. That's how old I am. I just said Xerox.
Xerox, yep.
And then for you young kids.
Mimeographed.
No. So then she hands us off 2 new pages and like memorize those. You know, we're setting up.
Go.
We'll be shooting in 20 minutes or whatever. So Catherine and I go into this air-conditioned tent. She's like, do you want to run this? I was like, yes, please. Because you don't ask Catherine Bell to run a scene with you. You have to wait for her to ask you.
Yeah.
So I said, yes, please. We run the scene, you know, and I start to feel pretty good about it. And we go out there, we shoot it and nail it. And, you know, we got a bunch of different coverage and everything. And she was just, it was such a great experience. And the whole crew down there, I mean, that crew on Army Wives was fucking phenomenal.
That's
they were
great.
All like family. It was amazing. So I shot my scene, you know, episode comes out. Mm-hmm. Friends are all over there. We're all having a good time. Yay, made the cut.
Yay.
Man, this is awesome. And then a few weeks later or something like that, Rusty calls me up. He's like, hey, bud, they got another paramedic. No, that was the audition, paramedic. That was it. They got another paramedic thing, and they were thinking about, you know, bringing you back since you've already kind of been established in there as a paramedic. And I'm just like, awesome, sounds great.
Right.
I was like, this is recurring, because even 2 episodes is recurring. And he was just like, yeah, it's crazy. That kind of happens sometimes, you know? And I was just like, yeah, that's amazing. So I went back and shot another episode. Then like the next season, I think I came back for another one, and it had a name, Choi.
Yes.
And I was like, I got a fucking name, you know? and then like the next season came around, I came back again, and it was William Choi.
Oh,
and I was like, motherfucker.
Oh, yeah. I'm gonna have backstory.
Yeah. So like I was talking to Catherine, and she was just like, yeah, you know, like she was becoming a paramedic, and I was her trainer, basically.
Okay.
So they were like, yeah, they really want to see more of me doing this work, so they could be bringing you in a lot more for this. They brought me in a few times.
Right.
And then Catherine got pregnant.
Okay.
And then they had to write her out of that line of work because she couldn't do that kind of work pregnant.
Right.
And
then
that, there goes William Choi.
Yes.
William Choi did come back one more time for one more episode after Catherine stopped. After, you know, her character was no longer a paramedic. I was there for just a scene to, you know, put a sterile strip on someone's eyebrow or, you know, it was one of those type things. But yeah, it was crazy just how that kind of turned into recurring.
I mean, did that make your brain go into any different places of like, oh, maybe this is the start of something, or, you know, I'm fucking Choi on Army Wives, Jack.
I've allowed myself to kind of feel some of that, you know, because I don't want to deprive myself of those feelings.
Yeah.
And I think that it's dangerous for a lot of us to get to a point to where we do kind of feel that,
mm-hmm.
you know, because the chances are it's not going to do that. Mm-hmm. It's not going to be what you think it is.
Right.
But, you know, fucking live in that moment for a second. Allow yourself to have that joy and just be like, yeah, you know what? Something could fucking happen. Right. And then wouldn't that be awesome if it did? Probably won't, but damn it, something could. And so I lived in that for a little bit.
That's,
you know,
pretty spectacular, though. Because, I mean, you know, for as long as you've been doing this and to have truly the success that you've had and even the disappointments that you've had.
Yeah.
It seems like it hasn't gotten the best of you, and like, you seem very even-keeled and level-headed about all of it. Like, the downs only take you so far down because your wife didn't cheat on you. The highs only take you so high because you're like, who the hell knows what could happen tomorrow?
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, do you think that that's what's allowed you to sort of survive in this industry?
I think I'm awfully pessimistic about, like, making it, right? Okay. Like, the making it.
Right.
What everybody would call that.
Right.
You know, when I was younger, did I want, you know, fame, fortune, you know, the Brad Pitts, the, you know, all that shit? Of course, you know, like, as an actor, you're performing, you want to reach as many people as you can, and, right. and that kind of comes with it. And the older I got, you know, the more I was just like, yeah, I just want to make a living as an actor.
Right.
I just want to bring in enough money to where it helps my wife out and it helps the family out.
Absolutely.
And maybe we can have a little bit more fun and we can travel a little bit more.
Yeah.
You know, I don't need... I mean, if someone was just like, hey, man, you're going to be the lead in this thing, but I'm like, can I stay in Charlotte? And can I keep my house here? Because I like my house.
Right.
You know? Like, I don't feel the need for, like, all the extraneous crazy shit anymore. But about the industry, I think I'm a little pessimistic about it because, you know, the chances of that kind of success are very, very, very slim.
Yes.
You know, we're dreamers in a way, right? Well, I mean, not in a way. We're dreamers. And everybody would call us dreamers for pursuing something so insane.
Mm-hmm.
So to, like, understand you're probably not going to ever reach that pinnacle, and to be okay with that
mm-hmm.
is, I think, something special. But then still, when those moments come, you know, when we got accepted to Slam Dance,
right?
Jared Hess, who directed Napoleon Dynamite,
mm-hmm.
he got Napoleon Dynamite funded through Slam Dance because of a film that he had in Slam Dance.
Yeah.
Lena Dunham came out of Slam Dance. Christopher Nolan came out of Slam Dance. You know, you start to think about it, like, all these directors and stuff that have come out of here, and you're just like, this could be something fucking huge.
Right.
And I'm, you know, I'm talking to Mike, the director, and I'm just like, we need to be prepared in the event that someone comes and talks mm-hmm. to us, with the understanding that chances are no one's going to come and talk to us.
Right.
But we have to be prepared for it. So allow yourself to be happy, you know, allow yourself to enjoy the moments of, like, I fucking booked that. Whether or not that means fame, fortune, stardom for the rest of my life is one thing, but right. I booked that and it's amazing and I'm going to enjoy it. But I can be pretty pessimistic about the business at times. I think it keeps me in check. It keeps me from, like, losing my shit, you know?
Well, for somebody who's, you know, self-proclaimed pessimist, you're a pretty optimistic and upbeat guy. And I really appreciate you coming down and sitting and talking with me. Good luck at Slam Dance, man.
Dude, thank you.
Keep me posted. Let me know what's going on, because, of course, I will pimp your shit with the podcast as much as I can.
Please do.
This has been Stephen West Rogers on You May Have Seen. Thanks so much for listening. Follow us on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. And if you'd like to leave a comment or review, that's always nice. You can also email us at youmayhaveseen@gmail.com if you have a comment or a question, and we'll give you a shout-out in the next episode.